The United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable Margaret Bartley presiding. God bless the United States and this honorable court.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Judge Bartley. I'm joined today via teleconference by Judge Peach and Judge Toth. We're here today for the matter of Herman O. Bailey versus Robert L. Wilkie, Secretary of Veterans Affairs, docket number 19-2661. The issues before us relate to DC 7528 and 38 CFR 4.115 and 38 CFR 3.155 relating to how to file a claim. Counsel for the parties, please state your name and your appearance for the record, beginning with appellant's counsel.
Good afternoon, Chief Judge Bartley, Your Honors. Deborah Loria for Chisholm, Chisholm & Kilpatrick, and with me on the line is Amy Odom, also of the firm.
Thank you, Ms. Loria. And Secretary
Good afternoon. Counsel? Good afternoon for the Secretary, Mark D. Gore, and with me today is Deputy Chief Counsel Ed Cassidy.
Thank you. Each party will have 30 minutes to present arguments. Ms. Loria, would you like to reserve a portion of your time?
Yes, Your Honor. 10 minutes, please.
Okay, that's fine. We'll make that happen. And you may proceed, Ms. Loria, when you're ready.
Chief Judge Bartley, Your Honors, and may it please the court. The March 2016 examination, VA ordered relevant to the rating of Mr. Bailey's prostate cancer, noted that the veteran reported lymphedema and diarrhea as complications from his cancer. But the board refused to evaluate compensation for these complications. It ignored Section 3.155B2 and the plain language of Diagnostic Code 7528, either of which compelled the consideration of such complications. First, Section 3.155D2 states that, and I quote, VA will also consider all lay and medical evidence of record in order to adjudicate entitlement to benefits for the claimed condition, as well as entitlement to any additional benefits for complications of the claimed condition. Its regulatory history demonstrates that complications must be adjudicated within the scope of the claim. Specifically, the regulatory history says issues which have not been claimed by the claimant but have resulted as complications of claimed service-connected conditions will continue to be identified and adjudicated. As a result, there was no need for the veteran to file a separate claim. His appeal for the proper rating of his prostate cancer encompassed complications from that cancer. And his appeal for the rating of the prostate cancer placed the entire scope of that claim before the board.
Ms. Loria, this Judge Toth, sorry to interrupt you, but so when you say something's part of a claim, what exactly does that mean?
So the claim includes the claimed condition, which here is prostate cancer. And then it also includes, pursuant to Section 3.155B2, complications of that claimed condition. And in the March 2016 examination of the prostate cancer, the examiner checked off a box indicating that the veteran had complications and noted that he reported lymphedema and diarrhea. So those are squarely within the complications language of Section 3.155D2.
Sure, but I mean, as a takeaway, I mean, is something significant insofar as a part of a claim merely that you would not have to file a separate claim for it? Or does it have a significance that might be more precise than that?
So the veteran wouldn't need to file a separate claim, and it would be in the same claim stream going up the stream along with prostate cancer. So he wouldn't need to file a separate NOD or substantive appeal. It's all one claim from start to finish.
Right, but so for instance, like if the lymphedema, however that's pronounced, if that can be rated separately under a separate DC, right? I mean, it might be a secondary consideration, for example. Would that also be considered part of the claim, or are you saying that that language means something more specific than that?
It would be considered part of a claim. So the first thing the board would need to do is evaluate the scope of the claim. And here the scope includes lymphedema because it's a complication. And then in terms of evaluating compensation, it could compensate that lymphedema as a secondary condition. But here the board didn't complete that first step of properly evaluating the scope of the claim to include lymphedema and diarrhea.
Good. Thank you.
And this is Judge Bartley. So Ms. Luria, is a complication the same as a secondary condition, or is it just, it just encompasses it and is more than that? Or how do you view these things?
We view the complication question as going to the scope of the claim. And then once the scope of the claim is properly evaluated, the question becomes, how should these complications be compensated? And they could be compensated as a secondary condition under 3.310 or as a manifestation under 4.25. But that really goes to how the benefits should be awarded. And as noted, we're really within the question of scope of claim, and that needs to go to the complications issue.
Right, but is in your view, is complications the equivalent of a secondary service connection claim or a secondary matter, or is it something more than that?
It can be the same as a secondary condition, Your Honor. So because the lymphedema and the diarrhea, I'm sorry.
Yes, this is Judge Peach. Was the diarrhea and the lymphedema caused by the radiation, or was it caused by the cancer?
Your Honor, it was caused by the radiation, which was the treatment for the cancer. And in promulgating Diagnostic Code 7528, the Secretary noted that a total rating would take into account the side effects and complications of treatment. So it stands to reason that the Diagnostic Code as a whole meant to take that into account. And the M21 also discusses treatment such as radiation treatment under rating considerations, and specifically notes that bowel problems can stem from radiation treatment.
Thank you.
Oh, wait, Ms. Luria, this is Judge Bartley. Were you just saying that these complications, the lymphedema and the diarrhea, are part of or are contemplated by 7528?
So 7528 says to rate on residuals, and here the lymphedema and diarrhea could either be considered residuals of the prostate cancer or complications of them. The Diagnostic Code 7528 says that between renal and voiding dysfunction, one or the other must be chosen. But it does not say that other residuals cannot also be rated.
Well, it doesn't, the first sentence of for 115A say, the first and second sentence, I guess, that these are the only areas of dysfunction that are contemplated by the, these are the major areas of dysfunction that are contemplated by the genitourinary disease?
It says that those are areas of dysfunction that should be compensated, one or the other, either bleeding or renal, but it does not say that other residuals cannot also be compensated. And even if it did, section 3.155D2 says that complications are included within the scope of the claim. That's also in line with the duty under 3.103A and Morgan to maximize benefits. So one way or another, the lymphedema and the diarrhea, which stem from the prostate cancer, need to be compensated or at least evaluated within the scope of the prostate cancer appeal.
Well, this is Judge Bartley again. I like your inclusion of one way or the other, because parts of your brief read as though you thought that those two conditions or manifestations, the lymphedema and the diarrhea, would fall under DC 7528. But wouldn't that actually hurt him? I mean, doesn't he want to get secondary service connection for these things as opposed to being rated under 7528? Because the code that we're dealing with there would only look at the voiding dysfunction.
Right, Your Honor. I think the idea here is that the diagnostic code notes residuals and does not preclude the rating of residuals other than voiding or renal dysfunctions. So the veteran could potentially get separate ratings for the lymphedema and the diarrhea. And section 3.155D2 provides the avenue for that. It says that complications should be considered and adjudicated.
Judge Peach? Ms. Luria, this is Judge Bartley. I have an additional question. So, do you care whether these two residuals, the lymphedema and the diarrhea, are characterized as warranting a separate evaluation or secondary service connection? I'm a little confused as to why you keep honing in on the separate evaluation argument.
Yes, Your Honor.
Does it matter to you? And why, if it does?
No, it doesn't matter. The veteran could get separate ratings or they could be considered secondary ratings. It really doesn't matter. The point is that 3.155D2 says that complications are within the scope of the claim. And the board here noted the March 2016 examination, which documented complications that the veteran reported lymphedema and diarrhea, but then did not consider or fully consider whether compensation was warranted for those. So that's where the error is. And then in terms of the form of compensation, the board could evaluate that on remand.
But wouldn't there be the possibility for an earlier effective date if it were rated as a you know, directly under 7258, as opposed to secondarily?
I don't think so, Your Honor, because if they're considered to be within the scope of the prostate cancer appeal, the effective date would be from the date of the reduction, which was March 1st, 2016.
Thank you.
And Ms. Loria, this is Judge Bartley. So what action shorter would the board take on remand if we concluded that the board erred in not adjudicating entitlement to, let's say, secondary service connection for lymphedema and TDIU, given that there has been movement down at the RO on these matters?
The board would need to adjudicate whether entitlement was warranted for the period between March 2016 and January 2019 for the lymphedema. The RO has granted benefits for lymphedema from January 2019 forward, but the remainder of that period still needs to be adjudicated. And then for diarrhea, it would be from March 2016 until the present.
And the March 2016 date is because of the VA exam.
That's because that's the date that the veterans rating was reduced from 100% down to 60%, and he filed the appeal with that reduction. So it stems from March 1st, 2016 forward.
Okay, thank you.
So the board therefore had an obligation to grant appropriate relief for lymphedema and diarrhea pursuant to 7104D3. And section 3.155D2 actually provides that silence on an issue is an effective denial. So in terms of earlier effective date, the veteran could be foreclosed going forward if the scope of the prostate cancer claim is not properly recognized now. Manzanares also does not bar the relief we seek here, and in fact, it supports us. It did not address this key complications language from section 3.155D2, and that is the language we rely upon. Manzanares merely held that section 3.310 does not provide an avenue for an earlier effective date for a secondary condition because 3.310 is about entitlement to benefits and not the scope of the claim. We agree. Section 3.155D2 is the regulation on point as to scope of claim. And that particular language was not addressed by Manzanares. We therefore ask the court to hold that section 3.155D2 requires that when rating a condition, the board evaluate complications of the claimed condition. Alternatively, we ask the court to hold that Diagnostic Code 7528 allows for complications of prostate cancer to be evaluated and is not limited to renal and voiding dysfunctions only, and then remand the veteran's appeal for prostate cancer for the board to evaluate the complications of lymphedema and diarrhea and to adjudicate entitlement to TDIU. If there are no questions, I'd like to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
This is Judge Bartley. Judge Peach, do you have further questions?
Not at this time.
And Judge Toth, do you have further questions?
I don't, thanks.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Loria. Mr. Gore, you may proceed when ready.
Good afternoon, and may it please the court. Ultimately, the board committed no error here in its March 1, 2019 decision in declining to address the potential for entitlement to either lymphedema or diarrhea. Ultimately, the presentation to the contrary is based on the flawed assumption that this appeal presents a rating question. And really, this appeal does not present a rating question. This appeal presents a service connection question, or even more fundamentally, really, a claims question. With respect to diarrhea here, what is alleged is that this distinct disability arose as a result of or approximately due to the service-connected prostate cancer issue. And that is a garden variety and quintessential example of a theory of secondary service connection under 38 CFR section 3310A. And this court has already held in Brannon that claims under 3310A are just that. They are separate claims. Then there really is no daylight between this case and Brannon. In Brannon, what the court faced was a service-connected skin condition that was alleged to have resulted in a psychiatric condition, and the contention was that the board erred by failing to address the potential for entitlement for that psychiatric condition. And really, it's the same thing here with a service-connected prostate cancer that is alleged to have resulted in a secondary disability of diarrhea. And just as in Brannon, before the board is obligated to discuss that potential avenue for entitlement, there needs to be a claim speaking to that disability. In Brannon, it was a psychiatric disability, and here it is the diarrhea. And there just simply is no claim here concerning diarrhea under Mr. Bailey's own formulation. The only thing that we have here as potentially raising this issue are some statements in medical records. He's mentioned, I believe, in his briefing, a May 2015 DBQ, and he seems now to be focusing more on February 2016 VA examination. But notably, nothing in those actually raises any assertion of entitlement to benefits. They're just notations of the existence of symptoms.
Judge Toth, I mean, is the diarrhea a complication of the prostate cancer? You know, and if so, what do you say of counsel's argument that that would have to be at least addressed and adjudicated under 3.155D2?
Well, it could be a complication, Your Honor, but the record doesn't disclose that apart from the mere checking of a box where it's just noted as additional symptoms that exist. But the complications language of 3155D2 does not serve to expand these claims these primary claims to include secondary issues, and whether we want to call them secondary disabilities or residuals or complications, whichever term we want to use, they ultimately speak to the same thing, which is additional disability that is related to a primary service-connected disability. And the Federal Register discussion that the Secretary offered in support of his amendment of Section 3155 makes this clear. And on multiple occasions in that discussion, the Secretary specifically eschewed the notion that just the mere mention of additional disabilities in the record would raise claims for those conditions. Indeed, it was exactly that circumstance that the Secretary was seeking to address with his amendment of Section 3155, the entire purpose.
Sorry to interrupt you, but so let me ask you the same question I kind of led with opposing counsel, which is, what does it mean if something's part of a claim?
Well, to be part of a claim, at least in this context, would be to say that we have a claim. I mean, we obviously do have a claim here concerning the rating for prostate cancer, and to say that, say the diarrhea or the lymphedema are part of that claim would be essentially to say that we also have claims here for these other conditions, that these additional disabilities would be going along the claims adjudication process hand in hand with this prostate cancer issue. And ultimately it's a key concept here in that we do have multiple cases, both from this court and the Federal Circuit, first by this court in Ross and then later in Ellington and Manzanares from the Federal Circuit, that specifically say that these secondary issues are unequivocally not part of the primary claims. And that all really dovetails with this court's earlier decision in Brannon, saying that these theories of service connection under 3310A require separate claims. It's not for the board to conjure these issues with a searching review of the record, but rather it is the minimal burden on the claimant to assert entitlement to these. And again, we just don't have that here. All we have is mention of the existence of symptoms in some medical records that, as this court has noted long ago in Criswell, the mere existence of medical records does not make a new claim. There needs to be an actual claim for these benefits.
Mr. Gore, this is Judge Bartley.
Yes.
So you're speaking in very broad terms here. Now, it's true, I think, that several years ago, VA attempted to make claimants file a specific claim for every single thing. But there was some objection. I have the proposed rule and here, the proposed rule in the discussion and the final rule in the comments. And there was some discussion and some comments about you're changing your 3.103 duty to grant all, you know, benefits that a veteran might be entitled to. And there were some other objections by individuals or groups. And so it seems to me like VA did pull back in that final rule and said that that they made the distinction between related matters that are related to the claimed condition and matters that are unrelated to the claim that was filed. So is it your view that in early March of 2016, said that these things were due to the prostate cancer for the treatment, said that the lymphedema and the diarrhea were due to that somehow those nevertheless are still unrelated to the prostate cancer?
I sort of made your question. You're suggesting that in light of the evidence here that the diarrhea would be considered something that is part of the prostate cancer due to its relation to it?
Well, I'm not using related versus unrelated. 79 FR 57 660.
As to include this, I guess I'll try to avoid using part of, but to make this additional issue, I guess, included within the prostate cancer, but due to its relation?
Well, I mean, it wasn't talking about prostate cancer there, but it looks like you said they do not create a duty to adjudicate matters unrelated to the claim filed, but they also, then you, VA, says they include a duty. This is the change to 3.155. Essentially creates a duty to adjudicate claims that are related. And then in the final rule uses the term complications. So what I'm basically saying is it seems like in the proposed rule, you tried to constrict things very narrowly and make it so that claimants would have to file a separate claim for every single little itty bitty thing they wanted. But then whenever you came up with the final rule, in D2 and in the explanation that accompanies the final rule, you made an exception for things that are related or are complications of the claimed condition. And I'm
sure,
just saying, why aren't these two things, diarrhea and lymphedema especially, why can't they be considered related or complications of?
Well, they may be, Your Honor. They may well be related to the prostate cancer, and they may well be consequences of it, or however we want to phrase that relation. But the Secretary made clear in the Federal Register discussion that these distinct disabilities still do need to be claimed. There's some explanation there. You mentioned the 3.103A duties, the longstanding duties in that regard. And the Secretary noted that this rulemaking doesn't alter the 3.103A construction. And in that regard, the Secretary spoke to ancillary benefits, and that is preserved in 3.155 language, where ancillary benefits, just like they always have been, will continue to be adjudicated along with the issues that the disabilities that give rise to them. But the Secretary also noted multiple times in the Federal Register discussion that the exactly the problem that the secretary was trying to address with the 3155 rulemaking was the inefficient and somewhat chaotic system where we had just mere notations in the record of additional disabilities and claimants were anticipating or expecting those to result in additional adjudications of those issues. And that tended to result in the lengthy litigating of claims, just trying to ferret out what exactly was included in those. And the secretary specifically noted that to allow that same type of construction to continue here would, and to quote, would inevitably lead to exactly the time-sensitive clarifications and interpretations that we seek to avoid as remaining in a large volume of cases. And to,
right.
to read
Gore,
the
comp- this is Judge Bartley. I have no, well, I won't say I have no doubt, but the secretary may perhaps have wanted to stop the practice of what I used to call inferred claims. But they did say that they wanted to. However, my point earlier was that when they got their comments on this, they appear to have, I'm just reading, you know, the final, the language from the comments here and VIA's explanation of why it changed its language from the proposed rule to the final rule and was seemingly more liberal. It says it would, this new rule, it generally would not preclude VA from identifying, addressing, and adjudicating related matters that are reasonably raised by the evidence of record, which the claimant may not have anticipated or claimed, but which logically should be addressed in relation to the claim filed. So, I mean, I agree with you that several times they say, look, we're going to stop doing what we used to do. But then they explain that they're not going as far as they originally intended to go in the proposed rule. And so that's why it's VA's use here of related. The question is whether the diarrhea and the lymphedema are related matters reasonably raised by the evidence of record, which the claimant may not have anticipated or claimed, but which logically should be addressed in relation to the claim filed. That's why they relate.
Yes, Your Honor. And again, they might be related, but that really kind of puts the cart in front of the horse a little bit in that this relation is exactly the question to be addressed in a claim speaking to those disabilities. And this complications language and this the remaining duty that VA undertakes to broadly construe these claims, really what that's talking about is theories. Like to borrow from our facts here, if we actually say we had a claim specifically speaking to diarrhea that just simply articulated a bare entitlement to those benefits without any explanation of the theory, and then in the course of developing that claim, evidence arose suggesting that it was indeed related to the service-connected prostate cancer, we would go ahead and construe that claim broadly to include the 3310A theory, recognizing that this is a disability that was specifically claimed, although this theory wasn't articulated. But everything in the secretary's discussion here suggests that the entire predicate of this 3155 rulemaking was to steer these issues back to specific claims, because it was the lack of a necessity for these claims that gave rise to the inefficiency and somewhat chaotic system that the secretary was trying to address. And to read this complication language as a broad exception to that ultimately would swallow that rule almost entirely. In that, I guess as an example of what I guess I would see as something of an absurd result flowing from reading it that way is, if anyone who has watched television in the last decade knows that any medication that anyone ever takes, from the most mundane over-the-counter pain reliever to the most cutting-edge antiretroviral therapy, everything has a side effect. And so ultimately, under the construction that's offered by Mr. Bailey here, all one would need to ever do is in the context of some pending rating issue, identify some side effect that's associated with some medication that had ever been prescribed. And suddenly that issue would then become part of this already existing claim. It would, in a sense, activate some latent component of this claim that existed back whenever that rating issue first arose. If, say, we had a knee issue and someone took over-the-counter ibuprofen to treat that and eventually ended up with, I guess, a stomach ulcer from it, suddenly, even in the absence of a claim, we would have a stomach issue being rated as part of a knee claim. It would completely swallow the rule in that we would, the scope of these claims really would stretch to the horizon as long as somebody could identify some route by which something else could be considered related to or a complication of the primary disability. And so what would ultimately result is, when these claims come in, the secretary would have to engage in this searching review of the record to identify anything suggesting some sort of a complication relationship between the two. And that really is exactly the type of analysis that the Federal Circuit just rejected in Sellers less than 2 weeks ago, and that the focus in construing the scope of claim is on the claimant's submissions, and in looking to it looks to what was actually claimed. And in this case, there's nothing in this record to suggest that there is a claim for diarrhea. Then the only way to really get there is to say that just by keeping alive a rating issue pertaining to the primary disability, the prostate cancer, that we have some latent component of that for anything that might be characterized as a complication. And then once evidence arises that this complication may actually exist, then this latent claim springs into being and creates an adjudicative duty along with it.
Mr. Gore, this is Judge Bartley. Yes. If VA didn't intend that to happen, why do they have this sentence about complications then?
As I mentioned, Your Honor, a lot of people, when they make these claims, they may not understand that an additional avenue for entitlement exists under 3310A, where you can have a secondary relationship to service-connected disabilities. And where that's not asserted and the evidence suggests it, we'll go ahead and construe it as seeking entitlement along that avenue. Like I mentioned, if we just have a bare claim seeking benefits for a particular condition with no actual theory articulated, but then the evidence suggests that there is a viable route to service connection through 3310A, we'll go ahead and construe that. And that would be speaking directly to the complications language, that we would service connect this as a complication of the service connected language. But the focus still is, in terms of construing the scope of the claim, whether or not we have a claim that for this condition.
Chief. I'm looking at the Federal Register. I mean, the language I'm quoting is, it says basically, in new section 3.155D2, we have provided that VA will continue to identify and adjudicate claims reasonably raised by the evidence of record that are related to or reasonably within the scope of the claims issues in the complete claim, right? So, I mean, I'm understanding what you're saying, Mr. Gore, about how, in a sense, sort of attenuated things can get in a record. I think the argument's well taken in that respect, but that doesn't, I mean, VA seems to have suggested that they would continue to adjudicate complications related to service-connected claims, you know, as identified by a schedule.
And speaking to the language you identify, Your Honor, I think the key takeaway from that language is the phrase "within the scope of the claim," the whole of the rulemaking discussion talks about that scope of the claim as being. We're looking at the claim and looking at whether or not there's been an actual articulation of entitlement to benefits for the particular disability. And again, multiple occasions in the rulemaking, the secretary specifically eschews the notion that where we can have the situation like we have here, where we just have mere mention of the existence of something in the record as raising a claim. That is exactly the situation the secretary was trying to avoid. And to read this complications language as essentially eviscerating exactly the purpose of this entire rulemaking, I don't think is a fair reading, particularly where the secretary speaks to it multiple times and then offers examples of what he did not want to occur with this new rulemaking. And one of the things that he did not want to occur was a situation like we have here, where we have a claim for one condition and then evidence simply mentioning other conditions and having those then spring new claims into light, where all the secretary is asking would-be claimants to do is simply file claims. And to put that in the framework here, the only thing that's asked of Mr. Bailey here is that he just needs to simply ask for this benefit. And all he points to in the record, again, is just mere mention in medical records, which this court held long ago, just does not equal a claim. And that's only reinforced by the secretary's subsequent rulemaking, trying to steer these things onto standardized claims forms to give some inefficiency and some clarity to the process. And I think to read this complications language as creating such a broad exception would really to suggest that the secretary was throwing gasoline on the fire that he was trying to put out with this rulemaking. And I don't think that ultimately that's a fair reading of this language. What we're speaking to there with this complications is the theories language to fill out these claims to include all potential avenues for entitlement of the claimed condition. And that really is what informs the scope of the claim.
Mr. Gore, this is Judge Bartley. What else would Mr. Bailey have had to have on record here in order to come within the compass of the sentence about complications?
I would suggest all he would need to do is exactly what he did with his lymphedema issue, is just simply submit a claim mentioning it.
But that doesn't make any sense, Mr. Gore, because the regulation is indeed called How to File a Claim, 3.155, but this subsection is claim D and then scope of claim 2. So what this section is saying is once you get a complete or formal claim, VA will adjudicate it, and then it goes on to give instances, ancillary benefits and complications, where there is no need, where it's where the disability or symptoms or whatever the manifestations fall within the scope of the complete claim that was already filed. I mean, Mr. Bailey filed a complete claim here for prostate cancer and residuals. So saying that he needs to file it, what would he need? You answered my question about what would he need to fall within the ambit of the complications language here. You said he would have to file a claim. Yeah. That, in terms of the context of the reg, that doesn't really make any sense. So what would he need, assuming that this is indeed a exception to the rule that a complete claim needs to be filed?
Yeah, I see your point, Your Honor. But again, I mean, ultimately, the answer really is no different. We're talking about, we certainly do have a complete claim here for prostate cancer, and that is what that claim is for, is prostate cancer. And then once the malignancy and the treatment for it cease, then voiding and renal dysfunction. We don't have a claim for diarrhea here. And so as my answer was before, that what Mr. Bailey would need to do here is simply file a claim noting that he wants benefits for diarrhea. And he still has not done that. He's done it with the lymphedema. And in just perusing that claim here, I don't see that that was asserted even specifically as secondary to his prostate cancer, although I would need to look more closely at that. But regardless, if he were to submit a claim just simply, again, as I mentioned, just barely asserting entitlement to service-connected benefits for diarrhea without mentioning any theory by which he thinks he's entitled, we would go ahead and construe that claim as including as a complication of prostate cancer. But he still needs to simply submit a claim seeking benefits for that disability. And
Mr. Clark, you are defining the word complications here in the context of a claim for prostate cancer residuals, as that word complications includes only a renal or voiding dysfunction.
No, Your Honor. In terms of complications, I'm speaking about, I mean, the diarrhea here could well be a complication. And that relationship to the prostate cancer as a complication would be just what would lead to service connection under 3310A. But it's just that under Brandon, under Ross, Ellington, and Manzanares, you need a claim for that. The relationship that gets service connection here is the fact that it's proximately due to the prostate cancer. And that's a secondary service connection relationship. And whether we want to call that a complication or something else, the theory is exactly the same in that it's something that is proximately due to something else. And that just simply is not a part of the primary disability. And the Federal Circuit was clear and unequivocal on that point in Ellington and Manzanares, that these complications or secondary disabilities, if we prefer, are simply not part of the primary claim. And again, all Mr. Bailey needs to do here is just what he did with the lymphedema issue, and is simply file a claim. I did hear a tone there, Your Honor. It sounds like my time is almost up. Go ahead, Your Honor.
This is Judge Peach. I have a question, Chief.
Oh, sure. Go ahead, Judge Peach.
Yeah, thank you. Going back to the reading of 3.155, it says the VA will consider all lay and medical evidence of record in order to adjudicate entitlements to benefits for the claimed condition, as well as entitlement to any additional benefits for complications of the claimed condition. Including those identified in the rating criteria. Now, in Manzanares, the court did not address the complication portion of that regulation, but did address the ancillary benefits portion. And in that area, the Federal Circuit concluded that the ancillary benefits stem from the specific condition that is the subject of the claim. Would that definition or guidance be applicable to the complication section of that regulation?
Well, it could be. We certainly could have a complication of a disability that led to an ancillary benefit. This case would present fertile ground for such an example, where, as Mr. Bailey notes in the M21, it's noted that erectile dysfunction is frequently among the complications of prostate cancer, and that, of course, is not one of the residuals noted in the in Diagnostic Code 7528. But that would result in an award of ancillary benefits. So that would fit within that ancillary benefit language there. But of course, the ancillary benefits isn't the only thing the Federal Circuit was speaking about in Manzanares, and that they also spoke to just what we have here, and that is the secondary disabilities as not being part of the primary disabilities. I think we certainly do have two different things that the Federal Circuit was speaking about there in Manzanares. And one is the ancillary, which really isn't an issue here. And the other, which is an issue here, is the secondary service connection issue. And I don't see a way to accept Mr. Bailey's construction
here. This is Judge Bartley. We'll add another 5 minutes.
Thank you, Chief Judge. I don't see a way to accept Mr. Bailey's construction here without bumping up against the holdings of Ellington and Manzanares, because ultimately what is the construction here is to say that this proximate disability due to the prostate cancer is part of the prostate cancer claim. And that's just, of course, that's exactly what Ellington and Manzanar say is not the case.
Mr. Gore, this is Judge Toth. I just want to make sure I'm 100% clear about what you're saying. I mean, are you arguing that, I mean, the veteran's argument here for diarrhea and lymphedema, that it just doesn't meet the traditional reasonably raised standard, or are you saying that these are claims that simply cannot be reasonably raised anymore in the context of a claim and you need to file separate service connection claims for, right? Do you see the difference?
Yes. And it would be the latter, Your Honor. We're talking about a distinct disability here. And the allegation is that we have an entitlement to service connection by virtue of a relation to a primary disability, the prostate cancer. And as I mentioned at the outset, that is a garden variety theory of entitlement under 3310A, which requires a new claim. And the language of 7528 doesn't change that, in that we don't have broad language there just referring the adjudicator to anything that could reasonably be considered a complication or related to it. The diagnostic.
But I mean, sorry to interrupt you, but I mean, all of the concerns that you mentioned earlier about just the burden placed on adjudicators to mention anything in the record, I mean, that all, it makes sense, but that in a sense seems to be kind of a difference in degree, right? I mean, about what might constitute something that's reasonably raised. I mean, what you're saying here is a bit more radical than that, in that, I mean, you would sort of look at that language, you know, that Judge Peach just mentioned, the VA will consider all lay and medical evidence of record in order to adjudicate entitlement to benefits for claim conditions, as well as entitlement to any additional benefits for complications of the claim condition. I mean, I don't see how that doesn't just read out that section of federal code, what you've just said.
Well, I mean, I tend to agree, Your Honor, that it would seem to read that out, which is exactly why that reading of it, I would submit, is not an appropriate one, in that, of course, one of the primary or principal canons of construction is to give
Let's suspend proceedings for a minute here until perhaps Michael can get that cleared up.
We hear it too. Let me try muting counsel's mic and see if it changes it.
Okay.
It did, as soon as I muted Mr. Gore's mic. So it's something.
Yeah, I can hear clearly now.
So can I? This is Judge Peach. Well. Yes, I can too. Judge Peach can hear.
Going to unmute him again and see what happens. Nope, it's definitely something on his.
Maybe we should, I wonder if he can hear us above that. Maybe we can ask him to call in again, to just recall.
I will try. Mr. Gore, if you can hear this, please hang up and dial back in. I have an option to expel him if you would like me to try that. He didn't hang up.
Yes, I think we should try that, and I'm sure he'll just call back in.
Does not appear to have worked. Oh, wait, there. Okay. He just left. Let's see if he comes back in.
Okay. Is Ms. Loria still on the line?
Yes, I am still on the line.
Okay, thank you.
He just called back in. Hang on one second, please. Mr. Gore, are you back with us?
I am.
Okay, you're clear now. I think we're ready to proceed, Chief.
Okay, let's reinitiate proceedings here. Go ahead, Mr. Gore. I believe you were speaking, or was it Judge Toth?
Yeah, so I can kind of rehash with the question. So I asked about basically whether this was more about the reasonably raised standard or about whether any complications or categorically would have to be raised as separate claims.
Yes, Your Honor, and it sounded like your question kind of suggested that this complication language largely reads out the language as requiring these separate claims. And as I don't know at what point audio kind of went downhill, but as I was saying, that actually augurs in favor of not reading that language in that way. Of course, one of the principal canons of construction is to read regulations and statutes in a way as to give effect to their language. And I just don't think it makes sense to read the Secretary's amendment of 3155D2, including this complications language, as effectively undoing the very purpose of the rulemaking where that language was inserted. And as I mentioned, I think the discussion speaking to that complications language really speaks to what I was saying a couple of times about how we will fill out these claims to include theories. But we, as we've noted in the Federal Register discussion, that what we're not talking about with that is broadly construing these to include claims and disabilities that have never been articulated by the claimant.
Mr. Gore, I mean, has the agency publish something official in terms of that type of interpretation about its own reg that you're aware of?
I think that's fairly supported in the Federal Register discussion that we have here at at 79 FR 57660 and the following pages. I think that interpretation is fairly clear in that publication, in that the Secretary went out of his way more than once to suggest or to make clear that what was not intended here was to allow the raising of these additional claims that have never been claims concerning disabilities that have never been actually articulated on a claim form. That's exactly where we're trying to go away from, and to include in that an exception that completely swallows that entire purpose. I don't think is a fair reading of the Secretary's Federal Register language or
this
of the regulation.
This is Judge Bartley. I apologize. This is Judge Bartley. Let's add another 5 minutes.
Did that answer your question, Judge Toth?
Yes, it did. Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, Mr. Gore, this is Judge Bartley. So the word complications, you seem to be saying that doesn't equate to secondary conditions. But in other instances in the rating schedule, such as in the Diagnostic Code 7913 for diabetes mellitus, the word complications is used, and having some experience with that, I know that by use of the word complications there, the Secretary has always meant conditions that are secondary to diabetes, such as retinopathy, neuropathy, et cetera. Are you giving the language complications in 4115 in the DC 7528, are you giving it a different meaning here?
No, Your Honor, and to clarify, I'm saying that the complications here does refer to things like secondary service connection. And of course, we're looking at diabetes. I mean, I think really we have the same sort of construction there that we have with 7528, in that with diabetes, like with prostate cancer, we have the Secretary having made a medical determination in advance that certain additional disabilities serve as appropriate proxies to measure the disability from something else. For instance, like with diabetes, you know, we do we do say there to rate on the complications, and the list of those complications is well known, of course, where we have a claim for a rating for diabetes, and we have that person presenting with diabetic retinopathy, that obviously is a complication of diabetes that's within the scope of that diagnostic code. But we have a different scope here with this diagnostic code, in that the secretary did specifically say, and as you noted, Your Honor, in section 4155A, that those additional disabilities that serve as the proxy for measuring the genitourinary disability on an ongoing basis are voiding and renal dysfunction. So those certainly are different disabilities. I mean, voiding and renal dysfunction are not prostate cancer, but the secretary has said in his diagnostic code that those are what we're going to use as the proxy to measure that residual disability. But once you go beyond that, however, and this is clearly articulated by the secretary in the Federal Register discussion in support of the amendment to 7528, once you go beyond the voiding and the renal dysfunction, then we're talking about a 3310A situation. I believe the question that the secretary spoke to in the Federal Register there was psychiatric disability, where we frequently see claimants claiming psychiatric disability secondary to these, to things like prostate cancer, just obviously due to the hardship of them. And it is specifically noted there, and I'll quote, psychiatric or other complications are subject to service connection under 38 CFR section 3310. And just to kind of get back now at the conclusion here to where I started, these 3310A theories, as the court held in Brannon, are separate issues that require separate claims. So ultimately here, the secretary's diagnostic code makes clear that, as the board said, the appropriate focus of a 7528 rating is the renal and the voiding dysfunction. And once we go beyond that, we're talking about complications that would be service connectable under 3310A, so long as we have a claim actually seeking benefits for those conditions. But if there are no further questions from the court, that would fairly sum up. Yes.
This is Judge Peach. I have another follow-up question, if I might.
Certainly.
Then are you saying, Counselor, that 3.155 language, as it relates to the complications, that in this particular case, or maybe other cases, that the complications are those that are contemplated by the actual diagnostic code, and in this case, they talk about renal and voiding functions. And that, do you think that that sets the kind of the parameters of what the complications might entail?
Well, in terms of what can be adjudicated without an additional claim, yes.
This is Judge Bartley. Let's add another 5 minutes.
Thank you, Chief Judge. In terms of what can be adjudicated without an additional claim, then I would say the answer would be yes there. And again, I'd refer to the Secretary's Federal Register language there, where the Secretary specifically referred to complications being identified and adjudicated as indicated by Part 4. Which of course is the rating schedule here. And as I mentioned, of course, where we have voiding and renal dysfunction, those are clearly different conditions than prostate cancer. Prostate cancer is obviously, it's cancer, it's a malignant neoplasm. And voiding and renal dysfunction are completely different than that. But by virtue of the way the secretary set up his diagnostic code, that necessarily steers the adjudicator to the voiding and the renal dysfunction, those additional separate disabilities, even though we don't have a claim for those, because that is what the secretary has identified just as a medical matter. He's identified those as being the appropriate proxies for measuring the ongoing disability. Does that answer your question, Judge?
Well, would they be considered complications?
I think they fairly would be, yes, in that we've identified those as the manifestations of the prostate cancer that remain, the disability that remains in the body after the malignancy and the treatment have both ceased. So those certainly would be complications, but those specific examples by operation of the diagnostic code itself would not require a separate claim.
Thank you.
Now, Mr. Gore, this is Judge Bartley. Turning to a point that appellant's counsel made, if we were to agree with you that any dispute as to lymphedema or TDIU were mooted because the RO granted those benefits and we don't remand those to the board, would the RO or the board eventually be permitted to find those that lymphedema and TDIU were reasonably raised in conjunction with the claim for prostate cancer and award an earlier effective date, or would they be bound or somehow hindered by the implicit denial portion of 3.115D2?
They would not be hindered by the implicit denial portion. I wouldn't see any problem here concerning any sort of claims preclusion. And then, of course, the predicate of the Secretary's argument here today is that these issues are, well, the lymphedema anyway, the lymphedema is not part of this claim. So, of course, the board's failure to or deciding not to adjudicate that is a finding that this wasn't before the board. So we wouldn't get to implicit denial in that it's not something that the board actually had before it. Mr. Bailey would still be able to seek a full remedy with respect to his objections to the effective date in the proceedings that are ongoing before the agency.
So you think he could go, if we found this was moot because of the RO action, you believe that even in light of 3.155D2 that he could obtain an effective date back to, and I'm forgetting back to, I believe it was March 2016. Yeah. That's possible in your view?
If he were able to persuade the RO or the board to that effect, then yes. And again, simply because the necessarily follows from the construction I'm offering here today, and that I think is consistent with the Secretary's regulation, is that the lymphedema and the diarrhea are just not issues that were part of this claim. And insofar as they were beyond the board's jurisdiction, they're not something that the board could be binding Mr. Bailey's hands with going forward.
And on another point, if we were to find that, if we were, this is just like the opposite of the last question, if we were to find that the claim for secondary service connection for lymphedema was reasonably raised and we remanded to the board for the board to consider it, would that remanded claim be, would it supersede or would it be connected to the claim that's currently before the RO? Before the RO get expedited consideration?
Well, I think
let's add another 5 minutes, excuse me.
Thank you, Chief Judge. I think that's a more difficult question, and I think that the difficulty of the question really underscores really why the issues are moot here. In that, of course, there's the court held in Holland where we a notice of disagreement on the service connection issue is not a notice of disagreement of the downstream issue of effective date. And so we really have the two, if, you know, assuming for the sake of argument here that, you know, we did have a vacature and remand with respect to a would-be reasonably raised claim on the lymphedema, we'd have really the same claim existing in two places under two completely different procedural postures, and that would necessarily be predicated on an earlier NOD encompassing a downstream issue, which as I mentioned, would run contrary to this court's decision in Holland. I think ultimately, I don't know how that would sort it would shake out, in that we would, of course, have to be relating an NOD to something, an NOD on service connection to an NOD on a downstream issue, even though in this board decision, that's something that just couldn't have occurred in the absence of a grant of service connection. We, of course, couldn't possibly have had an NOD from Mr. Bailey on the question of service connection in this board decision, where service connection hadn't even been granted yet. And of course, it's this board's decision that frames this court's jurisdiction here. So I think that kind of this morass that exists when you try to get to the answer to that question really, I think, informs why that issue is clearly moot here.
And so the fact that this having a similar but not exactly the same claim in several places in process at the same time has always happened. That is, if the board had found, let's say, you know, basically for the last 30 years, if the board found that there was no new and material evidence as to an issue, the veteran could appeal that decision here and yet could also file a claim to reopen, file an appeal of the board decision here and then file a claim to reopen down below. That's always been the case. Like, you can have very similar items pending in different parts of the system at the same time, generally, right? That doesn't change your view of what you just answered?
No, I don't think it does, and at least kind of going along with your example, where we have multiple claims to, I guess, reopen, those are, of course, separate claims. They have different evidentiary bases. But here, of course, you know, at least in the terms of reviewing this board decision by the board, of course, this board decision, lymphedema was not service connected. There just couldn't have been an NOD there with respect to that downstream question. All we had was an NOD. Well, we didn't even have an NOD with respect to that with this board decision, because again, as the board found, that's just the lymphedema here just wasn't an issue that was before it. It arose in the first instance with I believe it was January 2019 claim that hadn't been addressed by the RO yet. It would only be after agreeing with Mr. Bailey that we would have this claim that had been reasonably raised and then, I guess, shoehorned into the board's jurisdiction here and then vacated and remanded, that only then would we result in this case, what would actually be the very same issue existing in two different procedural postures at once, which I think would be distinct from, I think in your example of multiple claims to reopen based on different new material evidence.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Gort. Judge Peach, do you have any further questions?
Yes, one short one. Counsel, do you recall if the appellant, was there any evidence or indication in the record that he could not work because of the prostate cancer and those named things associated with the prostate cancer, the voiding function and the renal function? Was there any evidence that interfered with his employability?
I believe so, Your Honor. In his January 2019 application for TDIU, he did submit a substantial body of evidence there, including a number of records relating to his prostate cancer residuals, and he asserted unemployability as a result of his prostate cancer.
Okay, thank you.
So again, Your Honors, if there are no further questions from the court, I think I fairly summed up the Secretary's position here, that as articulated in our briefing, the issues of compensation for diarrhea and for lymphedema simply were not before the board here by virtue of their needing to have separate claims, and the issue of TDIU along with lymphedema would be moot, and is something that Mr. Bailey could pursue before the agency in his now pending claims.
Judge Tuck, do you have any further questions?
I don't.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Gore. Ms. Loria, you may proceed with rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honors. The Secretary concedes that lymphedema and diarrhea may be related to or a complication of the prostate cancer. Section 3.155D2 requires that the board adjudicate complication within the scope of the claim. And the Federal Register supports that. As to the question of whether the lymphedema and diarrhea were complications, the DBQ is formulated specifically to elicit this information. And here the examiner checked off a box indicating that there were complications and then noted that the veteran reported lymphedema and diarrhea. Because the benefits for lymphedema and diarrhea and TDIU have not been awarded in full, remand is needed for the board to adjudicate those issues for the remaining periods of time. Thank you, Your Honors.
Judge Peach, do you have any further questions for Ms. Loria?
No, I don't.
And Judge Toth?
I don't.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Loria. Thank you both very much for your arguments. The case is submitted for consideration and the court is adjourned.
The court is in recess.